Welcome, listeners, to KPTZ's coverage of the 2016 Port Townsend Film Festival. This is your friendly neighborhood interviewer, Marcia Pearlstein. What follows are a series of interviews to whet your appetite for the festival on September 23rd to 25th, this very year, 2016. The full program is on the festival website, www.ptfilmfest.com. It will also be an insert in the leader or can be picked up very soon at the Rose Theater as well as the festival office on Taylor Street. Filmgoers may treat themselves to an extensive range of activities. There's definitely something for everyone. Special thanks to our indefatigable and intrepid executive director, Jeanette Force, master programmer, Jane Julian, and all-around central organizer, Victoria O'Donnell. Here come the interviews. And I have with us today Doug Blush, and he is the editor and producer of Phil's Camino, and he's the supervising editor of Jim, the James Foley Story, both of which will be in the festival. Welcome, Doug.
Hello, thank you so much.
Well, Doug, I must say, Phil's Camino was a very moving story. Would you let our listeners know what they're going to be seeing?
I'm so glad that it's coming to Port Townsend, because I think audiences there are going to just fall in love with Phil, who is the character at the center of the story. And it's really a story about a man who has lived his life kind of in his own rules. He's also a local resident. He lives on Vashon Island. And what he faces in the film is the thing we all eventually face, which is our own mortality. He's lived as a very iconoclastic and independent man, and he finds out that he's dealing with stage 4 cancer. And in the course of his treatments, one of his inspirations is he's always been interested in the Camino de Santiago, which is a famous road in Spain that's been walked by pilgrims for hundreds of years. He's always wanted to walk it. But of course, you know, in the midst of treatment for such a severe, you know, case of cancer, you can't really go traveling around the world. And of course, you know, the odds were always stacked that just wasn't going to be likely to be able to be done. So without telling too much of the film, Phil comes up with a way to bring the Camino home to himself, manages to construct a Camino of his own. And that's about as much as I'll say up to that point, because I want people to really come and experience. There's some wonderful parts of the story that really kind of speak to everybody about what it's like to have both hope and perspective. And I think audiences from all over the spectrum of interests have found something in this film to tune into. We've just had a fantastic run with the film. 15 film festivals so far, 9 awards, audience and best of awards at those festivals, and we've just had an amazing run with it. We're very proud of it.
As well you should. You should continue having an amazing run. It's a very inspiring and moving film. How did you come to know this man and decide to do a film about him?
Well, I came to the film through our director, Annie O'Neill, who's been a friend of mine for a very long time. We actually, as we always like to say, you know, all good things come from the relation of our dogs. I have a lovely border collie named Amos, and she had a wonderful sort of mutt named Tucker. And Tucker and Amos were the best of friends. We would meet at the dog park for years, and we would just run the dogs around, and we would talk about everything. And in the course of that, Annie had been very interested in the Camino. She had walked it and was a subject in another film called Walking the Camino. She was one of the 6 subjects featured in the film. She talked quite a bit about the experience of the documentary. I was coming up as a documentary person, working on a lot of different films over the years. So we would trade notes. And then she finally, you know, a few years ago, she got the inspiration after meeting Phil Volker. She decided, I want to make a film about Phil because his journey is really unique. And so she dived in, and I sort of followed the progress of this amazing journey that she was taking. And when it came time to make the film, she said, would you be a part of this? And I said, absolutely, let's do this. It was this perfect coming together of this world that we had been sharing, but a whole new world for me, because I had not known that much about the Camino, and then I got to know Phil and the Camino really well through the process of the film. It's been amazing.
Were you with Phil the first time he got to view the film?
Not the first time. I heard it was tear-soaked and wonderful and great, but I was there for the major premiere at South by Southwest, which is the big festival in Austin, Texas, and we were absolutely beside ourselves. A huge number of people turned out. We had a great crowd. People applauded in the middle of the movie, which I never see. It's one of those great moments where you know you've really touched them because they were almost jumping out of their seats right in the middle of the film. Phil was there, and his wife Rebecca, and a bunch of other travelers of the Camino came. We stayed with some pilgrims from the Camino, and it was just this beautiful weekend where there was just so much love in the room, which has been the story with this film all along.
They're a wonderful little club, the Camino folks. They've really done something pretty magical and amazing, mm-hmm. and they come from all walks of life. So now let's just jump away a little bit from Phil's Camino to the James Foley story. What would you like to tell our listeners they can expect when they come to see it in lines around the block?
First thing I'll say is bring a pack of tissues with you. It's a very intense emotional journey. Obviously, many people know James Foley from, I think we all found out about James Foley in similar ways, usually flashed across our TV screens when the headlines broke about his very sad death at the hands of ISIS. He had been documenting and telling the story of the Syrian people where other people had run away, where other reporters had run away. James stayed, and James made it a point to tell a story of a people that needed their story told. And he was an amazing guy. He was brave. He was caring and giving, and he would have sacrificed everything, and he did, for the work he was doing. He always said that, you know, his life was sort of secondary to the work that he had to do. And the film is really two parts. The first part is his life being a photojournalist and as a videographer and journalist. And the second part is his captivity in ISIS, which is told by all the other people who are captive with him. And it's one of the most bracing stories I guarantee that you'll see this year or probably any other. It's just an incredible movie.
And I think it's so important for these stories to be told because this is what we're all facing at this time. Where are you going next, Doug? What do you have in motion?
Oh, well, I'll tell you, the third film, there's actually a third film that I participated in, which is a really terrific movie called Magicians, Life in the Impossible. That's a film that I supervise edited as well. Director Christoph Baden has been to several Northwest locations, and he did a film called From Hood to Coast about the run from Mount Hood down to the coast of Oregon. So he's a veteran doc filmmaker who's got this beautiful film about the lives of four magicians over a year. Really a charming film, one that I think people are going to love. It's a real crowd pleaser of a film.
Is that
and
in our current
showing at Port Townsend?
Oh, so you got three films in?
Yeah,
oh.
This is my third one, and it's a terrific movie. I think all three films are absolutely circle them in the catalog and definitely check them out. They're all great.
So did you start out in film? Or have you sort of perambulated your way into the field?
That's a great term, actually. Perambulated is exactly right. I went to USC Film School as a college student, and I sort of got this love of documentary while I was there. I went like most, you know, young film students go, and everybody wants to be Spielberg. But I got there, and I realized that there was this magic in telling nonfiction stories. And it stuck with me even as I worked on some big Hollywood films. I actually did behind-the-scenes work, those little documentaries you see about big movies that are on HBO sometimes, or you'll see them on Entertainment Tonight and whatever. I worked on those for years, and I found that I liked the documentary part of it better than I liked the big movie I was working on. So it really stuck with me. And I decided about 15 years ago or so now, I have started just nothing but feature documentaries, and that's all I do now.
Things come to you through friends and through reading articles in the paper, or how do you really connect with a project, or I guess it's different in each case?
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes you see something that really catches your eye, or there's something you've always cared about that you feel you should make something about, you know, that needs clarity, or there's a point of justice that you want to get out there. We've had films that have actually changed laws in the United States. Very proud of one called The Invisible War, which actually changed the rules protecting our armed women and men in the U.S. military. And that's considered a real benchmark of making change with film now. My wife and I right now are making a film about those who have survived and overcome suicide, you know, the suicide attempt survivors. And we're making a film that's going to really change how we talk about this, because we think that people who've been there don't have a voice right now, and there's this movement going on that's actually bringing those people out of the closet. And we're really excited. I was working on it this morning, and it's the opposite of what you think a film about that sort of thing would be like. It's very joyous and full of life and full of hope.
When you make the choice to not, after you have considered doing so, it's a very liberating thing. Not always and not initially, but eventually.
Absolutely.
I think your films really are a service to the larger community.
Oh, thank you. It's work that I truly love, I have to say, and in the many, many wonderful films that I've been involved with. I learn something every time. Every one of them is an adventure. You know, there's never a dull moment. Each subject is something that I suddenly become, you know, an instant expert on because I have to do research really quickly. I get to meet the people who are the experts about something, and sometimes they're just incredible lives that I wouldn't get to know otherwise.
Are you going to be up here for the festival?
I am going to be there. I'm so excited to come back. I was there last year. And I've told the organizers of the festival, and I'll tell everybody, all of your listeners, it's one of the best festivals in the United States. And I say that knowing a lot of them. I've been to a lot of festivals. It's just this lovely, lovely weekend of film, and it's so personal and so warm. And the people I met there were probably some of the friendliest people I've ever met on the festival circuit. I can't recommend it enough, and I've become a big booster of the Port Townsend Film Festival.
Well, thank you. And I noticed that our intrepid Jeanette Force and team pamper all our filmmakers in such a way that you can have a two-minute film or a two-hour film, but they really take care of you. And I think it's the spirit is pretty amazing. So thank you for feeling that, because they've succeeded in creating that spirit.
They make us feel like kings and queens, believe me. We love it there.
Well, King Doug Blush, editor and producer of Phil's Camino, part of course, Jim, the James Foley Story, supervising editor, and say the same, the third film and your role again.
The third film is Magicians, Life in the Impossible, co-directed by Christoph Baden and Marcy Hume, and I believe the whole crew will be there as well. So we're all really looking forward to coming up. It's going to be a big celebration this weekend. So come join us, everybody, please.
So as we get ready to close, is there a website our listeners could approach to learn more about you and everything wonderful you're doing?
Oh, boy. There's so many for the different films. I think if you look up my name on IMDb, the Internet Movie Database, that's the best place to go. I'm still working on a new website for our company here, so I won't give out an address we don't have yet. But yeah, on IMDb, you can see the extended catalog of things that I've been involved with and films that I'm really proud of.
Well, I'm really proud to know you on the radio waves. I look forward to meeting you in person. And thank you, Doug Blush, for being with us today.
Thank you so much. I can't wait to see everybody there.
I cure you. But I've discovered that there's a difference between being cured and being healed. So being cured is being over your disease. But in the case of cancer, some of the treatment is so brutal that what good is it to be cured if you come out a basket case? So to me right now at this point, I'm striving to be healed, which means that you're reconciled with the bigger picture. You're reconciled with God family and all the important things. So whether you're cured or not is sort of secondary. If I come back to Seattle and I have my scan...
You're listening to 91.9 FM, KPTZ, Port Townsend. Another interview for our film festival of 2016. I have with me Andrew Perez. Welcome, Andrew.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And Andrew Perez is an editor, actor, screenwriter. He grew up in Northern California and as a teenager performed with ACT's Young Conservatory and traveled to London where he played James in Time on Fire at the Royal National Theatre. He went on to study theatre at Northwestern University, where aside from acting, he began writing plays. And he has a long bio, which would take the entire interview. There are actually going to be two films that have an Andrew Perez imprint in them, and one is My Scientology Movie, and you're an actor
right.
In that. You have the lead, as a matter of fact, and you play...
I play David Miscavige, the the leader of Scientology.
And enough said. Watch the film and you'll find out why they were followed and threatened and everything else by Scientologists that didn't like this documentary to be put out there. But now we're at a film where you also were an actor, but also, more importantly, the writer of this film. And would you give the listening audience a feel for Bastards and E Diablos?
Bastards y Diablos, yes. It's a feature film about two half-Colombian American half-brothers who journey through Colombia after their father passes away. They've been estranged from each other and their father for most of their lives, and they come together to disperse his ashes in fulfillment of his will. And it's a journey of discovery, and it's really the inheritance that they get is the journey and the relationship and the bond between them that is rekindled. It's a love story between brothers across the beautiful country of Colombia. You see a completely different face of Colombia. This movie's not about narco trafficking or terrorism or any of the stuff that you see in the headlines. It's not Narcos. It is a family story, an adventure, but you really see like the beauty of the Colombian people and the landscapes. We travel from Medellin, Bogota, Cali, Santa Marta, Cartagena. You get the coffee plantation region. It really shows the country, and that was one of my goals as a writer, was to not only show a story about identity of these two Latino American people reconnecting with their roots and each other, and who their father was, and how, you know, fathers and stepfathers and brothers inform an identity, but also the identity of a country, and Colombia is very much a character in this movie, and it's shot beautifully by Peter Grigsby, who's a fantastic cinematographer. But we took a crew of six to Colombia and made this on a shoestring budget, and it's been a labor of love, and I'm so excited to share it with the Port Townsend community.
And I'm going to quote from your website, at which we'll give the listener in a minute, because this really encapsulates a lot of what you just said, but so eloquently. The natural beauty of Colombia emerged as a character itself, though some of the more stunning locations proved difficult to access. We chopped our way through banana trees with a machete, ran out of gas driving up the desolate coast of Guajira, and clung to our equipment when whitecap waves blasted our raft in the Pacific. Reaching these remote locales would have proved impossible for a larger production, yet our small crew, who had risked our lives for our film, were rewarded with unspoiled beauty. It was certainly an intrepid effort, and I can't say enough about how you really broke down stereotypes about Colombia, which this movie is about beauty and connection and so many other things that you've been able to tap into in ways that this country is not often portrayed. So what got you interested in this story?
Well, it's very personal. I mean, I'm a Colombian American who lost a father, and I have a half brother. So I've always wanted to explore that relationship, particularly a relationship between two men who only share the same father. So they share this same masculine father figure, but they have very different relationships with him and very different relationships with his country. But the story itself is not me and my brother. It's just I mined that relationship for its dramatic potential, and that I could imagine resentments and the things that could keep these two apart for so long. And also, I knew the things that could draw us together. And I know a different Colombia than most people here know. And because most people here just, you know, believe everything they see in the headlines. I know a country that is full of riches, full of generous, very present people, spirited people, and a country that is just so biodiverse, full of beauty. And I wanted to show that as well. And I wanted to show an adventure, and it's romantic, and it's just all of these things I wanted to have in a movie that I guess it really came when I realized that myself, I have not been raised in a way that is connected to my Colombian heritage. So I think there was connection that I wanted to make, and I think that I was drawn to this kind of journey.
And it was quite a journey. You also did a nice combination of the actors were professional for the major roles, and yet, as you indicated in your website and as we could see in the film, you just found many regular people that were naturals for the film.
And yeah. I mean, as a writer, I was envisioning this to be very much, my hero is Cassavetes. I love the way that he uses an acting ensemble and mixes professional, trained actors, skilled actors with complete non-actors, but creates a safe environment where everyone can ricochet off of each other and be vulnerable and open up. And I've seen it done in a few like recent movies as well. Well, there's Beasts of the Southern Wild, which used non-actors with actors. And there was a great movie last year, which we won the John Cassavetes Award, actually, at the Indie Spirit Awards, about a woman. It was like the filmmaker's aunt played this role, a woman who comes home for a Thanksgiving dinner. And that was also in the same kind of vein I was going for. But I wanted people to really buy into the journey. And I wanted these two brothers, you know, me and Dylan Porter, who was my co-producer, he played the other brother, and we've had a long relationship. We rap together. We've acted in theater together since Northwestern University. We know each other well, and we play these two brothers, and we know we'd have a shorthand with each other. And we also know that we're good at, you know, freestyling with other non-actors. And we just created this environment where we cast the movie around us, and we wanted something real, playful, spontaneous, and something that you could buy that, yes, they speak in English to each other, and then they speak in Spanish, in broken Spanish, to the world around them, and they navigate together in their, you know, it's, I wanted the audience to be along for the ride and feel the sensations of, and the awkwardness of grasping at just, you know, bit by bit getting through, you know, this foreign territory. We had a 120-page script and some jazz riffing that happened along the way, and it was all in.
Yes, and you're right. You can't tell the difference between what was scripted and what just came about. There was just a real flow to the movie. And
thank you.
And people really connected. And are you going to be here for the festival?
Oh yeah, I'm here. I'm actually going to be doing a panel, a conversation on acting with Karen Allen.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful.
On the Friday, so that'll be fun. And then Dylan Porter and I are bringing a play. We don't know exactly when we're going to do it, but we're doing Annie Baker's The Aliens, and we're going to give a free performance somewhere.
That will be very exciting. It's always so nice because the folks that come here with their wonderful films are also so creative in many, many other ways that every year at the festival we have these little wonderful surprises that accompany it. And now we're going to get this play of yours, and that's a wonderful thing.
We're thinking about potentially doing a small theatrical run in the Pacific Northwest. And so we thought this as a pilot program to bring a play to this. And then if we do a theatrical run, we just want to keep acting. We don't want to just keep promoting this film. We want to be acting while we promote this film. So Dylan and I have this play called The Aliens, which is a beautiful play. And it's actually has us cast in very opposite roles as to the kind of relationship we play in Bastards y Diablos. So it'll be fun for people who see the movie to see the play. And hopefully we'll be doing that. We'll be back in Ashland where we were last, was it March, April? And then we'll, you know, hopefully be able to do the play along the Pacific Northwest.
Listeners, I hope you were taking this all in, because if you walk 2 feet, you're going to be bumping into Andrew Perez all over during the film festival. There'll be Bastards y Diablos. There'll be my Scientology movie. There'll be a free play. And there'll be Andrew on a panel talking about acting. So your real passion is acting, but now
I've been acting since I was 10, and that's my primary thing. Every once in a while, I'll write something. I've got something in the works for a next feature. I'm mostly just an actor, so that's where my main passion is, and I love the theater as well.
Well,
I'm really happy to be doing plays.
Well, Senor Andrew Perez, mucho gusto en conocerlo.
Mucho gusto.
I look forward to meeting you in person at the film festival. This is KPTZ 91.9 FM. I'm Marcia Perlstein, your friendly neighborhood interviewer. Adios, Andrew, until we meet again. Hasta luego.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Okay, bye.
La carta que su padre les dejó. Testamento.
Take me with you. This is my will. My last intention. I wanted you to be brothers.
We are. All grown up.
I wanted you to know Colombia. This country is my blood. And it's your blood, too. It is here that I want my ashes to be put, in a place that means something to me.
Special thanks to Mike Schlexer, engineer and editor extraordinaire, Larry Stein, program director with an especially extensive repertoire of knowledge of film, and Norris Petrich, station manager. Go gently. If you can't go gently, go as gently as you can. This has been Marcia Perlstein bringing you a special edition of Film Festival and KPTZ, getting together and getting the word out.
Must join your family who love you, who you are bound to for the distance of your lifetime. You will be brave. You will make mistakes. But you will learn. You will know me. You will know your homeland as brothers.